Remember me. Disc 8.
I paced to the other side of the room, thrusting my hand through my hair, trying to force some rational thoughts into my giddy head. We could meet and just talk. No, no. I can't start seeing someone behind Eric's back. I want my marriage to work. Eric and I just had sex, I say defiantly. I'm not even quite sure why I said that. There's silence down the line, and I wonder whether John is so offended he's gone. Well, if he has, that's a good thing. Your point would be? His voice comes down the line. You know, that changes things, surely. I'm not following. You think I won't be in love with you anymore because you had sex with Eric? I don't know. Maybe. Or you think having sex with Eric somehow proves you love him? His voice is relentless. I don't know, I say again, rattled. I shouldn't even be having this conversation. I should be marching straight out, holding the phone aloft, calling, Darling, it's John for you. But something's keeping me in this bathroom, the receiver clamped to my ear. I thought it might trigger my memories, I say at last, sitting on the side of the bath. I just keep thinking, maybe my memory's all there, all locked up, and if only I could get to it. It's so frustrating. Tell me about it, says John Riley, and I suddenly imagine him standing in his grey T-shirt and jeans, scrunching his face up in that way he does, holding the phone with one hand, the other elbow bent with his hand behind his head, a glimpse of armpit. The image is so vivid that I blink.
So how was it? The sex?
His tone has changed, is easier. It was... I clear my throat. You know, sex. You know about sex.
I do know about sex.
He agrees.
I also know about sex with Eric. He's adept, considerate. He has quite the imagination.
Stop it! You're making all of those sound like bad qualities.
We'll have to meet.
John cuts across me.
Seriously.
We can't. I feel a fearful quake deep inside me, like I'm about to step over an edge, like I have to stop myself.
I miss you so much.
His voice is lower, softer.
Lexi, you have no idea how much I miss you. It's tearing me up, not being with you.
My hand is damp around the phone. I can't listen to him anymore. It's confusing me. It's shaking me up. Because if it were true, if everything he was saying were really true... Look, I have to go, I say in a rush. I'll get Eric for you. My legs wobbly, I unlock the bathroom and head out, holding the phone away from me like it's contaminated.
Lexi, wait.
I can hear his voice coming from the phone, but I ignore it. Eric! I call brightly as I approach his door and he comes out dressed in a towel. Darling, it's John for you. John the architect. 13. I've tried. I really have tried. I've done everything I can think of to show the department that I'm not a bitch. I've put up a poster asking for ideas for a fun department outing, but no one's filled any in. I've put flowers on the windowsills, but no one's even mentioned them. Today, I brought in a massive basket of blueberry, vanilla and chocolate muffins and put it on the photocopier together with a sign saying, From Lexi, help yourself. I took a stroll into the office a few minutes ago, and not a single muffin had been taken. But never mind, it's still early. I'll leave it another 10 minutes before I go and check again. I turn a page in the file I've been reading, then click on the on-screen document. I'm working through paper files and computer files at the same time, trying to cross-reference everything. Without meaning to, I give an enormous yawn and lean my head on the desk. I'm tired. I mean, I'm knackered. I've been coming in every morning at 7 a.m. just to get through some more of this mountain of paperwork. My eyes are red from all the endless reading. I nearly didn't come back here at all. The day after Eric and I kind of had sex, I woke up with a pale face, the most crashing headache, and absolutely no desire to go to work again, ever. I staggered into the kitchen, made a cup of tea with 3 spoonfuls of sugar, sat down and wrote out on a sheet of paper, wincing at every movement, options. 1. Give up. 2. Don't give up. I stared at it for ages. Then at last I put a line through, give up. The thing with giving up is then you never know. You never know whether you could have done the job. And I'm sick of not knowing about my life. So here I am, in my office, reading through a debate on carpet fibre cost trends dating from 2005. Just in case it's important. No, come on, it can't be important. I close the file, stand up and shake out my legs, then tiptoe to my door. I open it a crack and peek hopefully out at the main office. I can just glimpse the basket through the window. It's still intact. I feel totally squashed. What's wrong? Why is no one taking any? Maybe I'll just make it absolutely clear that these muffins are for everyone. I head out of my room into the main office. Hi there, I say brightly. I just wanted to say these muffins are from me to all of you, fresh from the bakery this morning. So go ahead, help yourself. No one answers. No one even acknowledges my presence. Did I suddenly become invisible? So anyway, I force myself to smile. Enjoy! I swivel on my heel and walk out. I've done my bit. If they want the muffins, they want them. If they don't, they don't. End of subject. I really don't care either way. I sit back down at my desk, open a recent financial report, and start running my finger down the relevant columns. After a few moments, I lean back, rubbing my eyes with my fists. These figures are just confirming what I already know. The department performance is terrible. Sales went up in the last year by a bit, but they're still far, far too low. We're going to be in real trouble if we don't turn things round. I mentioned it to Byron the other day, and he didn't even seem bothered. How can he be so blasé? I make a note on a post-it. Discuss sales with Byron. Then I put my pen down. Why don't they want my muffins? I was really optimistic when I bought them this morning. I imagined everyone's faces lighting up at the sight, and people saying, what a nice thought, Lexi. Thanks. But now I'm crestfallen. They must totally hate me. I mean, you'd have to loathe someone to refuse a muffin, wouldn't you? And these are really deluxe ones. They're fat and fresh, and the blueberry ones have even got lemon icing on. A tiny, sensible voice in my head is telling me to leave it. Forget about it. It's only a basket of muffins, for God's sake. But I can't. I can't just sit here. On impulse, I leap to my feet again and head into the main office. There's the basket, still untouched. Everyone is typing away or on the phone, ignoring both me and the muffins. So, I tried to sound relaxed. Nobody want a muffin? They're really nice ones.
Muffin, says Fee at last, her brow wrinkled. I can't see any muffins. She looks around the office as though baffled. Anyone seen any muffins?
Everyone shrugs, as though equally baffled. Do you mean an English muffin?
Caroline is frowning.
Or a French muffin? They do muffins at Starbucks. I could send out if you like, says Debs, barely hiding her giggles.
Ha ha, really funny.
Fine, I say, trying to hide my hurt. If you want to be childish about it, then that's fine. Just forget it. I was only trying to be nice.
Breathing hard, I stalk out again. I can hear the sniggers and giggles behind me, but I try to block my ears. I have to keep my dignity. I have to be calm and boss-like. I mustn't rise. I mustn't react.
Oh, God, I can't help it. Hurt and anger are rising through me like a volcano. How can they be so mean? Actually, it's not fine.
I march back into the office, my face burning.
Look, I went to a lot of time and trouble to get these muffins because I thought it would be nice to give you a treat, and now you're pretending you can't even see them.
I'm sorry, Lexi. Fee appears blank and apologetic. I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
Caroline snorts with laughter, and something inside me snaps. I'm talking about this.
I grab a chocolate chip muffin and brandish it at Fee's face, so she shrinks away.
It's a muffin. It's a bloody muffin. Well, fine. If you're not going to eat it, then I will.
I stuff the muffin into my mouth and start chewing it furiously, then take another bite. Huge crumbs are falling all over the floor, but I don't care.
In fact, I'll eat all of them, I add. Why not?
I grab an iced blueberry muffin and cram that in my mouth too.
Lexi?
I turn and my insides shrivel up. Simon Johnson and Byron are standing at the door. Byron looks as if he's about to burst with delight. Simon's regarding me as though I'm a crazy gorilla throwing its food around at the zoo.
Simon!
I splutter muffin crumbs in horror.
Hi. How are you?
I just wanted a quick word if you're not busy.
Simon raises his eyebrows.
Of course not.
I smooth my hair down, desperately trying to swallow my claggy mouthful.
Come through to my office.
As I pass by the glass door, I catch my reflection and wince at my eyes, all red from tiredness. My hair is all over the place too. Maybe I should have put it up.
Oh well, nothing I can do about it now. So, Lexi, says Simon as I close the door and dump my half-eaten muffins on the desk. I just had a good meeting with Byron about Juno 7. I'm sure he's been filling you in on developments.
Sure.
I nod, trying to look as if I know what he's referring to. But Juno 7 means absolutely nothing to me. Is something happening then?
I'm scheduling in a final decision meeting for Monday. I won't say any more just now. Obviously, discretion is crucial.
Simon breaks off, his forehead suddenly furrowed.
I know you've had reservations, Lexi. We all have. But really, there are no more options.
What's he talking about? What?
Well, Simon, I'm sure we can work it out.
I bluff, desperately hoping he won't ask me to elaborate.
Good girl, Lexi. Knew you'd come round.
He raises his voice again, sounding more cheerful.
Now, I'm seeing James Garrison later on, the new guy at Southey's. What do you make of him?
Thank God,
At last, something I've heard of. Ah, yes, I say briskly. Well, unfortunately, I gather Southeys aren't up to scratch, Simon. We'll have to look elsewhere for a distributor.
I beg to differ, Lexi. Byron cuts in with a laugh. Southeys have just offered us an improved rate and service package.
He turns to Simon.
I was with them all day last week, along with Keith from Soft Furnishings. James Garrison has turned the place around. I was impressed.
My face is burning.
Bastard. Lexi, don't you agree with Byron?
Simon turns to me in surprise.
Have you met James Garrison?
No, I haven't. I swallow. I'm sure you're right, Byron. He has completely shafted me. On purpose. There's a horrible pause. I can see Simon regarding me with puzzled disappointment.
Right,
he says at last.
Well, I must be off. Good to see you, Lexi.
Bye, Simon. I usher him out of my office, trying my best to sound confident and senior management-like. Look forward to catching up again soon. Maybe we can do that lunch sometime.
Hey, Lexi,
says Byron suddenly, gesturing at my bum.
There's something on your skirt.
I grope behind and find myself peeling off a post-it. I look at it, and the ground seems to swivel beneath me like quicksand. Someone's printed in pink felt tip. I fancy Simon Johnson. I can't look at Simon Johnson. My head feels like it's about to explode. Byron snorts with laughter.
There's another one.
He jerks his head, and numbly I peel off a second post-it. Simon, do it to me. Just a silly prank. I crumple up the post-its desperately. The staff having a bit of fun. Simon Johnson doesn't look amused.
Right, he says after a pause. Well, I'll see you, Lexi.
He turns on his heel and heads away down the corridor with Byron. After a moment, I hear Byron saying,
Simon, now do you see? She's absolutely...
I stand, watching them go, still quivering in shock. That's it. My career's ruined before I've even had a chance to try it out. In a daze, I walk back into my office and sink into my chair. I can't do this job. I'm knackered. Byron shafted me. No one wants my muffins. At the last thought, I feel a pang of enormous hurt, and then suddenly I can't help it. A tear is running down my face. I bury my face in my arms, and soon I'm convulsing with sobs. I thought it was going to be so great. I thought being boss would be fun and exciting. I never thought... Hi. A voice pierces my thoughts and I raise my head to see Fee standing just inside the doorway. Oh, hi. I wipe my eyes roughly. Sorry, I was just...
Are you okay?
She says awkwardly. I'm fine. Fine. I scrabble in my desk drawer for a tissue and blow my nose. Can I do anything for you?
Sorry about the post-its.
She bites her lip.
We never thought Simon would come down. It was just supposed to be a laugh.
It's all right.
My voice is shaky.
You weren't to know.
What did he say?
He wasn't impressed. I sigh. But he's not impressed with me anyway, so what's the difference? I tear off a bit of chocolate muffin, stuff it in my mouth, and feel immediately better, for about a nanosecond.
Fee is just staring at me. I thought you didn't eat carbs anymore. She says at last,
Yeah, right, like I could live without chocolate.
I take another massive bite of muffin.
Women need chocolate. It's a scientific fact.
There's silence, and I look up to see Fee still gazing at me uncertainly. It's so strange. She says, You sound like the old Lexi.
I am the old Lexi.
I feel suddenly weary at having to explain all over again.
Fee, imagine you woke up tomorrow and it was suddenly 2010 and you had to slot into some new life and be some new person. Well, that's what this is like for me.
I break off another piece of muffin and survey it for a few moments, then put it down again. And I don't recognise the new person. I don't know why she is like she is. And it's kind of... It's hard. There's a long silence. I'm staring fixedly at the desk, breathing hard, crumbling the muffin into little pieces. I don't dare look up, in case Fee says something else sarcastic or laughs at me, and I burst into tears again. Lexi, I'm sorry. When she speaks, her voice is so quiet I barely hear it. I didn't. We didn't realise. I mean, you don't look any different.
I know.
I give her a rueful smile. I look like a brunette Barbie. I lift a strand of chestnut hair and let it fall.
When I saw myself in the mirror in the hospital, I nearly died of shock. I didn't know who I was.
Look. She's chewing her lip and twisting her bangles. I'm sorry about the muffins and the post-its and everything. Why don't you have lunch with us today? She comes towards the desk with a sudden eagerness. Let's start again.
That'd be nice.
I give her a grateful smile. But I can't today. I'm seeing Loser Dave for lunch.
Loser Dave?
She sounds so shocked. I can't help laughing.
Why are you seeing him?
Lexi, you're not thinking of...
No, of course not. I'm just trying to work out what's happened in my life during the last 3 years. Put the pieces together.
I hesitate, suddenly realising that Fee probably has the answers to all my questions.
Fee, do you know how it ended with me and Loser Dave?
No idea.
Fee shrugs.
You never told us how you broke up. You shut us all out. Even me. It was like... All you cared about was your career. So in the end, we stopped trying.
I can see a flicker of hurt in her face.
I'm sorry, Fee.
I say awkwardly. I didn't mean to shut you out. At least, I don't think I did.
It's surreal, apologising for something I have no memory of, like I'm a werewolf or something. Don't worry, it wasn't you. I mean, it was you, but it wasn't you.
Fee trails off. She seems pretty confused too. I'd better go.
I glance at my watch and get to my feet.
Maybe Loser Dave will have some answers.
Hey, Lexi, says Fee, looking embarrassed. You missed one.
She jerks her thumb at my skirt. I reach behind and pull off yet another post-it. It reads, Simon Johnson.
I would.
I so wouldn't, I say, crumpling it.
Wouldn't you? Fee grins wickedly. I would.
No, you wouldn't.
I can't help a giggle at her expression. I reckon he's quite fit.
He's ancient. He probably can't even do it anymore.
I catch her eye, and suddenly we're both laughing helplessly, like in the old days.
I drop my jacket and sit on the arm of the sofa and clutch my stomach, unable to stop. I don't think I've laughed like this since the accident. It's like all my strains and tensions are coming out. Everything's being laughed away.
God, I've missed you, says Fee at last, still gulping.
I've missed you too. I take a deep breath, trying to collect my thoughts. Fee, really, I'm sorry for whatever I was like or whatever I did.
Don't be a sap.
Fee cuts me off kindly but firmly, handing me my jacket.
Go and see Loser Dave.
Loser Dave's done really well for himself, it turns out. I mean, really well. He now works for Auto Repair Workshop at their head office and has some quite senior sales role. As he emerges from the lift, he's all dapper in a pinstriped suit with much longer hair than the buzz cut he used to have and rimless glasses. I can't help jumping up from my seat and exclaiming, "Loser Dave, look at you!" Immediately he winces and looks warily around the lobby.
"No one calls me Loser Dave anymore," he snaps in a low voice. "I'm David, okay?"
"Oh, right. Sorry, David. Not Butch."
I can't resist adding, and he shoots me a glare.
His paunch has disappeared too, I notice as he leans against the foyer desk to talk to the receptionist. He must be working out properly these days, as opposed to his old routine, which was 5 heaves of a dumbbell, followed by cracking open a beer and turning on the soccer. Now I look back. I can't believe I put up with him. Scuzzy boxer shorts littering his flat, crude anti-feminist jokes, complete paranoia that I was desperate to trap him into marriage and 3 kids and domestic drudgery. I mean, he should be so lucky.
"You're looking good, Lexi."
As he turns away from the reception desk, he eyes me up and down.
"It's been a while. Saw you on the telly, of course. That ambition show. Kind of programme I might have wanted to take part in once."
He shoots me a pitying glance.
"But I've leapfrogged over that level now. I'm on the fast track. Shall we go?"
"I'm sorry. I just can't take Loser Dave seriously as David, the fast-track businessman." We head out of the office towards what Loser Dave calls a good local eatery. And all the while he's on his phone, talking loudly about deals and mill, his eyes constantly sliding towards me.
"Wow," I say as he puts his phone away at last. "You're really senior now."
"Got a Ford Focus."
He casually shoots his cuffs.
"Company Amex card. Use of the corporate ski chalet."
"That's great." We've reached the restaurant now, which is a small Italian place. We sit down and I lean forward, resting my chin on my hands. Loser Dave seems a bit edgy, fiddling with the plastic menu and endlessly checking his phone. "David," I begin, "I don't know if you got the message about why I wanted to meet up.
My secretary told me you wanted to talk over old times," he says cautiously.
"Yeah, the thing is, I had this car accident, and I'm trying to piece together my life, work out what happened, talk about our breakup."
Loser Dave sighs.
"Sweetheart, is this really a good idea, dredging all that up again? We both had our say at the time."
"Dredging up all what?"
"You know."
He looks around and catches the eye of a nearby lounging waiter.
"Could we get some service here? Some vino? A bottle of house red, please?"
"But I don't know. I have no idea what happened." I lean forward further, trying to get his attention. "I have amnesia. Didn't your secretary explain? I don't remember anything.
Very slowly, Loser Dave turns back and stares at me as though suspecting a joke.
You've got amnesia?
Yes, I've been in hospital, everything.
Fuck me.
He shakes his head as a waiter comes over, then goes through the rigmarole of tasting and pouring.
So you don't remember anything?
Nothing from the last 3 years. And what I want to know is, why did we split? Did something happen, or did we drift apart, or what?
Loser Dave doesn't answer straight away. He's eyeing me over his glass.
So, is there anything you do remember?
The last thing is the night before my dad's funeral. I was in this nightclub, and I was really pissed off with you because you didn't turn up. And then I fell down some steps in the rain, and that's all I remember.
Yeah. He's nodding thoughtfully. I remember that night. Well, in fact, that's why we split up.
Why? I say, puzzled.
Because I never turned up. You chucked me. Finito.
He takes a gulp of wine, visibly relaxing.
Really? I say, astonished. I chucked you. Next morning. You'd had enough, so that was it. We were over.
I frown as I try to imagine the scene. So, did we have a big row?
Not so much a row, says Loser Dave after a moment's consideration. More like a mature discussion. We agreed it was right to end things, and you said you might be making the biggest mistake in the world, but you couldn't stop your jealous, possessive nature.
Really? I say dubiously.
Yeah. I offered to come along to your dad's funeral, show support, but you turned me down, said you couldn't stand the sight of me.
He takes a gulp of wine. I didn't bear you a grudge, though. I said, Lexi, I will always care for you. Whatever you want, I want. I gave you a single rose and a final kiss. Then I walked away. It was beautiful.
I put my glass down and survey him. His gaze is as open and blameless as it used to be when he conned customers into taking extra premium total scam insurance on their cars.
So that's exactly what happened? I say.
Word for word.
He picks up the menu.
Fancy some garlic bread?
Is it my imagination, or does he seem a whole lot more cheerful since he's heard I have amnesia?
Loser Dave, is that really what happened? I give him my severest, most penetrating look.
Of course, he says in an injured tone, and stop calling me Loser Dave.
Sorry, I sigh and start unwrapping a breadstick. Maybe he's telling the truth. Or a Loser Dave version of it, at least. Maybe I did chuck him. I was certainly pissed off with him.
So did anything else happen back then? I snap the breadstick in two and start nibbling it.
Is there anything you can remember? Like, why did I suddenly get so career-oriented? Why did I shut my friends out? What was going on in my head?
Search me. Loser Dave is perusing the specials menu. Do you fancy sharing the lasagna for two?
It's all just so confusing. I rub my brow. I feel like I've been plonked in the middle of a map, with one of those big arrows pointing, you are here. And what I want to know is, how did I get here?
At last, Loser Dave lifts his eyes from the specials menu.
What you want is sat-nav,
he says, like the Dalai Lama making a pronouncement on top of a mountain. That's it, exactly. I nod eagerly. I feel lost. And if I could just trace the path, if I could navigate back somehow. Loser Dave is nodding wisely.
I can do you a deal.
What? I say, not understanding.
I can do you a deal on a sat-nav.
He taps his nose.
We're branching out at auto repair.
For a moment, I think I might explode with frustration. I don't literally need sat-nav, I almost yell.
It's a metaphor. Metaphor. Right, right. Yep, of course.
Loser Dave nods, his brow furrowed as though he's digesting my words and mulling them over.
Is that an inbuilt system?
I don't believe it. Did I actually go out with this guy?
Yeah, that's right, I say finally. Honda make it. Let's have the garlic bread.
As I arrive home later, I'm planning to ask Eric what he knows about my breakup with Loser Dave. We must have talked about all our old relationships, surely. But when I walk into the loft, I sense straight away that this isn't the moment. He's striding around on the phone, looking stressed.
Come on, Lexi.
He puts his hand briefly over the phone.
We'll be late.
For what?
For what?
Echoes Eric, looking as though I've asked him what gravity is.
For the launch.
Shit, it's the Blue 42 launch party tonight. I did know that. It just slipped my mind. Of course, I say hurriedly. I'll just go and get ready.
Shouldn't your hair be up?
Eric casts a critical eye over me.
It looks unprofessional.
Oh, right, yes. In a total fluster, I change into a black silk tailored suit, put on my highest black pumps, and quickly shove my hair up into its chignon. I accessorise with diamonds, then turn to survey myself.
Ugh, I look so boring, like an actuary or something.
I need something else. Don't I have any brooches anymore? Or any silk flowers or scarves or sparkly hair clips? Anything fun? I root around for a bit in my drawers, but can't find anything except a plain quilted beige hairband. Great, that's a real style statement.
Ready?
Eric strides in.
You look fine. Let's go.
Jeez Louise, I've never seen him so tense and hyper before. All the way there, he's on the phone, and when at last he puts it away, he taps his fingers on it, staring out of the car window. I'm sure it'll go really well, I say encouragingly.
It has to, he says without turning his head. This is our big sales push. Lots of ultra highs, lots of press. This is where we turn Blue 42 into the talk of the city.
As we turn into the entrance gates, I can't help gasping. Burning torches lead the way to the front doors. Lasers are sweeping the night sky. There's a red carpet for guests to walk down, and even a couple of photographers waiting. It looks like a film premiere.
Eric, this is amazing!
Impulsively, I squeeze his hand.
It's going to be a triumph!
Let's hope.
For the first time, Eric turns to give me a quick, tight smile. The driver opens my door and I pick up my bag to leave.
Oh, Lexi.
Eric is feeling in his pocket.
Before I forget, I've been meaning to give you this.
He hands me a piece of paper.
What's this? I smile as I unfold it.
Then my smile kind of melts away. It's an invoice. At the top is Eric's name, but he's crossed it out and written,
assigned to Lexi Gardner.
I scan the words in disbelief. Chelsea Bridge Glass Objet, Large Blown Leopard, Quantity 1, to pay £3,200.
I ordered a replacement.
Eric is saying,
you can settle up any time. Check is fine, or just put a transfer into my bank account.
He's invoicing me.
You want me to pay for the leopard?
I force a little laugh, just to see if he's joking. Out of my own money?
Well, you broke it. Eric sounds surprised. Is there a problem?
No, that's fine. I swallow. I'll write you a cheque as soon as we get home.
No hurry.
Eric smiles and gestures at the waiting driver holding the door.
We'd better get going.
It's fine, I tell myself firmly. It's fair for him to invoice me. It's obviously how our marriage works. That's not how a marriage should work. No, stop it. It's fine. It's lovely. I stuff the paper into my bag and smile as brightly as I can at the driver, then get out and follow Eric along the red carpet. 14. Bloody hell. This is a real, serious, glitzy party. The whole building is alive with light and thudding music. The penthouse loft looks even more spectacular than before, with flowers everywhere and waiters in cool black outfits holding trays of champagne and gift bags ready for people to take. Ava and John and a few other people I don't recognise are gathered by the window, and Eric strides straight over to them.
People, he says, have we done the rundown on the guests? Sarah, you've got the press list. All under control?
They're here.
A young girl in a wrap dress comes hurrying in, almost tripping over her stilettos.
The Van Goghens are early, and they've brought friends, and there's another lot right behind them.
Good luck, guys.
Eric is high-fiving his entire team.
Let's sell this building.
The next moment, a couple in expensive-looking coats enters, and Eric springs into full charm offensive, ushering them to meet Ava, handing them champagne, and taking them over to see the view. More people are arriving, and soon there's a small crowd chattering and leafing through the brochure and eyeing up the water feature. John is about 10 yards away, to my left, wearing a dark suit, frowning as he talks to the Van Goghens. I haven't spoken to him yet. I have no idea if he's noticed me. Occasionally I glance over at him, then quickly look away as my stomach pops over. It's like I'm 13 again and he's my crush. All I'm aware of in this entire room full of people is him. Where he is, what he's doing, who he's talking to. I dart another glance at him, and this time he meets my eye. Cheeks flaming, I turn away and swig my wine.
Great, Lexi. Not at all obvious.
Deliberately, I swivel right away so he's out of my view line. I'm watching everyone arrive, almost in a trance, when Eric appears beside me.
Lexi, darling.
He has a fixed, disapproving smile.
You look awkward, standing there on your own. Come with me.
Before I can stop him, he's leading me firmly over to John, who's talking to another rich-looking couple. The woman is in a Dior print trouser suit, with dyed red hair and severely overdone lip liner. She bares her porcelain teeth at me, and her grey-haired husband grunts, his hand possessively clamped on her shoulder.
Let me introduce my wife, Lexi.
Eric beams at them.
One of the greatest fans of...
He pauses, and I tense up, waiting for it.
Loft-style living. If I hear that phrase one more time, I'm going to shoot myself.
Hi, Lexi. John meets my eye briefly as Eric heads off again. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, John. I try to sound calm, like he's any other person at the party, like I haven't been fixating on him since I arrived.
So, how do you like the loft?
I turn to the Dior woman. The couple exchange doubtful glances.
We have one concern, says the man in a European accent I can't quite place. The space, where it is big enough.
I'm stumped. This place is like a bloody aircraft hangar. How can it not be big enough?
We think 5,000 square feet is a generous size, says John. However, you could knock two or even three units together if you need a larger space. Our other problem is the design, says the man.
The design, echoes John politely. Is something wrong with the design?
Yet our home we have touches of gold, says the man. Gold paintings, gold lamps, gold...
He seems to run out of steam.
Carpets!
The woman puts in, rolling the R heavily.
Gold carpets!
The man jabs at the brochure.
Here, I see a lot of silver, chrome.
I see. John nods, deadpan. Well, obviously the loft can be customised to your own individual taste. We could, for example, have the fireplace gold-plated.
A gold-plated fireplace,
says the woman uncertainly.
Would that be too much?
Is there such a thing as too much gold? John replies pleasantly. We could also add solid gold light fittings. And Lexi could help you with a gold carpet, couldn't you, Lexi?
Of course.
I nod, praying desperately I don't suddenly snort with laughter.
Yes. Well, we will think about it.
The couple move off, talking in some foreign language I don't recognise. John knocks back his drink.
Not big enough. Jesus Christ! 10 of our units at Ridgeway would fit into this space.
What's Ridgeway?
Our affordable housing project.
He sees my blank look.
We only get planning for a place like this if we put up some affordable units.
Oh, right, I say in surprise. Eric's never even mentioned affordable housing. A flicker of amusement passes over John's face.
I'd say his heart isn't totally in that aspect of the job, he says,
as Eric steps up onto a small podium in front of the mantelpiece. The ambient lighting dims down, a spotlight falls on him, and gradually the hum of chatter dies away.
Welcome,
he says, his voice ringing out around the space.
Welcome to Blue 42, the latest in the Blue series of projects, dedicated to...
I hold my breath. Please don't say it. Please don't say it.
Loft-style living.
His hands sweep along and all the staff members from his company applaud vigorously. John glances at me and takes a step back, away from the crowd. After a moment, I move back too, my eyes fixed firmly ahead. My whole body is crackling with apprehension and excitement.
So, have you remembered anything yet?
He says in a casual undertone.
No.
Behind Eric, a massive screen is lighting up with images of lofts from all angles. Punchy music fills the air and the room becomes even darker. I have to hand it to Eric. This is a fantastic presentation.
You know, we first met each other at a loft launch like this one.
John's voice is so low I can barely hear it above the music.
The minute you spoke, I knew.
Knew what?
Knew I liked you.
I'm silent for a few moments, curiosity prickling at me. What did I say? I whisper back at last.
You said, if I hear that phrase loft-style living again, I'm going to shoot myself.
No!
I stare at him, then splutter with laughter. A man in front turns round with a frown, and as if in sync, John and I back away a few more paces till we're right in the shadows. You shouldn't be hiding away, I say. This is your moment, your loft.
Yeah, well, he says dryly, I'll let Eric take the glory. He's welcome to it.
For a few moments, we watch Eric in a hard hat on screen, striding over a building site.
You make no sense, I say quietly. If you think lofts are for rich wankers, why do you design them?
That's a good question.
John takes a gulp of his drink.
Truth is, I should move on. But I like Eric. He believed in me. He gave me my first chance. He runs a great company.
You like Eric? I shake my head in disbelief. Of course you do. That's why you keep telling me to leave him.
I do. He's a great guy. He's honest. He's loyal.
For a while, John's silent beside me, his eyes flickering in the dim light.
I don't want to fuck Eric's life up, he says finally. It wasn't in the plan.
So why?
He doesn't understand you.
John looks directly at me.
He has no idea who you are.
And you do, I suppose. I retort just as the lights come up and applause breaks out around the room. Instinctively, I take a step away from John, and we both watch as Eric mounts the podium again, glowing with an aura of success and money and on top of the worldness.
So, have you encountered Mont Blanc yet?
Says John, clapping vigorously, his mood lighter. What's Mont Blanc? I give him a suspicious glance.
You'll find out.
Tell me.
No, no.
He shakes his head, pressing his mouth together, as though trying not to laugh.
I couldn't spoil the surprise.
Tell me.
John, there you are! Emergency!
We both start in surprise as Ava appears behind us. She's dressed in a black trouser suit, holding a Hessian sack, and appears flustered.
The ornamental rocks for the master bedroom fish tank have only just arrived from Italy. But I've got to see to the kitchen place settings. Some fucking idiot's been fiddling with them. So can you do it?
She shoves the sack into John's arms.
Just arrange the rocks in the tank. There should be time before the presentation finishes.
No problem.
John looks at me, his eyes opaque and impenetrable.
Lexi, want to come with me and help?
My throat tightens up so hard I can't breathe. This is an invitation, a challenge.
No, I have to say no.
Yes. I swallow. Sure. I feel almost lightheaded as I follow John through the crowd, up the stairs onto the mezzanine level. No one even notices us. All attention is on the presentation. We head into the main bedroom and John closes the door.
So,
he says.
Look.
My voice is sharp with nerves. I can't carry on like this. All this whispering, creeping around, trying to sabotage my marriage. I'm happy with Eric.
No, he shakes his head. You won't be with him in a year.
He sounds so sure of himself, I'm nettled.
Yes, I will, I shoot back. I expect I'll be with him in 50 years.
You'll try your best. You'll try to mould yourself. But your spirit's too free for him.
At last, you won't be able to stand it any more.
He exhales, pressing his meshed hands outwards.
I've watched it happen once. I don't want to see it again.
Thanks for the warning, I snap. Well, when it does happen, I'll give you a call. How's that? We should do the rocks.
I jerk my head towards the sack, but John ignores me. He puts the sack down on the floor and comes towards me, his eyes intense and questioning.
You really, really don't remember anything?
No, I say almost wearily. For the millionth time, I don't remember anything. He's only inches away from me now, studying my face, searching for something.
All the time we spent together, all the things were said. There has to be something to trigger your memory.
He briefly rubs his brow, frowning.
Do sunflowers mean anything to you?
In spite of myself, I rack my brain. Sunflowers. Sunflowers. Didn't I once... No, it's gone. Nothing, I say at last. I mean, I like sunflowers, but...
E. Cummings? Mustard on fries?
I don't know what you're talking about, I say helplessly. None of this means anything to me. He's so close I can feel his gentle breath on my skin. His eyes haven't left mine.
Does this mean anything to you?
He's moved his hands up to my face, cradling my cheeks, rubbing my skin with his thumb.
No. I swallow. This?
He leans down and brushes a kiss against my neck.
Stop it!
I say feebly, but I can barely get the words out. And besides, I don't mean them. My breaths are coming shorter and shorter. I've forgotten about everything else. I want to kiss him. I want to kiss him in a way I didn't want to kiss Eric. And then it's happening. His mouth is on mine and my entire body's telling me this is the right thing to do. He smells right. He tastes right. He feels right. I can feel his arms wrapping tightly around me, the roughness of his 5 o'clock shadow. My eyes are closed. I'm losing myself. This is so right.
John?
Ava's voice comes through the door, and it's like someone electrocuted me. I fly away from John, tripping over my wobbly legs, cursing under my breath.
Fuck!
Shh! He looks thrown too. Stay cool.
Hi, Ava. What's up?
Rocks. Yes, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
I grab the sack and start pulling rocks out, chucking them into the fish tank as fast as I can with a series of splashes. The poor fish are swimming about like lunatics, but I don't have any choice.
Everything okay?
Ava puts her head round the door.
I'm about to lead a party of guests up here for the tour.
No problem, John says reassuringly. Nearly done.
As soon as Ava disappears, he kicks the door shut and comes back to me.
Lexi.
He grasps my face as though he wants to devour me, or hug me, or maybe both.
If you only knew, this has been torture.
Stop it!
I draw away, my mind spinning like a kaleidoscope.
I'm married. We can't. You can't just...
I gasp and clap a hand to my mouth.
Oh, shit. Shit.
I'm not looking at John anymore. I'm looking at the fish tank.
What?
John stares, uncomprehending, then follows my gaze. Oh.
Oops.
The tank has quietened down. All the tropical fish are swimming peacefully among the marble rocks, except one blue stripy one, which is floating on top.
I've killed a fish!
I let out a horrified giggle.
I've brained it with one of the rocks!
So you have, says John, going over to survey the tank. Nice aim.
But it cost £300. What am I going to do? The guests will be here any moment.
That's pretty bad feng shui, John grins. OK, I'll go and delay Ava. You flush it away.
He reaches for my hand and holds it a moment.
We haven't finished.
He kisses the tips of my fingers, then heads out of the room, leaving me alone with the tank. Wincing, I reach into the warm water and pick up the fish by the very edge of its fin.
I'm really sorry,
I say in a tiny voice. Trying to catch the dripping water with my other hand, I hurry into the high-tech bathroom. I drop the fish in the gleaming white loo and look for the flush. There isn't one. This must be an intelligent loo.
Flush! I say aloud, waving my arms to set off the sensors. Flush!
Nothing happens.
Flush! I say with more desperation. Go on, flush!
But the loo is totally dead. The fish is floating around, looking even more lurid blue against the white porcelain. This cannot be happening. If anything is going to put a customer off a high-end luxury apartment, it's a dead fish in the loo. I pull out my phone from my pocket and scroll down the contacts until I find Jay. That must be him. I press speed dial and a moment later he answers.
John here?
The fish is in the loo, I hiss, but I can't flush it.
The sensors should set it off automatically.
I know, but they're not setting anything off. There's a dead blue fish staring up at me. What am I going to do?
It's fine. Go to the panel next to the bed. You can override it and flush it from there.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing?
The phone abruptly cuts off. I hurry over to the bed and locate a flip-down panel set into the wall. A scary digital display blinks back at me, and I can't help a small moan. How can anyone live in a house which is more complicated than NASA? Why does a house have to be intelligent anyway? Why can't it be nice and stupid? My fingers fumbling, I press Menu, then Override, and Options. I scan down the list. Temperature, lighting. Where's bathroom? Where's flush loo? Do I even have the right panel? Suddenly, I notice another flip-up panel on the other side of the bed. Maybe that's it. I rush to it, wrench it open, and start jabbing at random. In a minute, I'm going to have to scoop the stupid fish out of the water with my bare hands. A sound draws me up short. It's a wail, a kind of distant siren. What on earth? I stop jabbing and look more carefully at the panel I've been hitting. It's flashing words at me in red. Panic alert! Secure space! A sudden movement from the window attracts my attention, and I look up to see a metal grill descending steadily over the glass.
What the...
Frantically, I jab again at the panel, but it flashes back at me, unauthorized, then returns to Panic Alert! Secure Space! Oh my God. What have I done? I dart to the door of the bedroom and look down to the space below. I don't believe it. It's mayhem. The siren is even louder out here. Metal grills are descending everywhere, over the windows, the paintings, the water feature. All the rich guests are clinging to each other in the middle of the space like hostages, apart from one portly man who's trapped next to the water feature.
Is it a robbery? Do they have guns?
A woman in a white trouser suit is exclaiming hysterically, wrenching at her hands.
George, swallow my rings!
That's a helicopter.
A grey-haired man is cocking his ear.
Listen, they're on the roof. We're sitting targets.
I'm staring at the scene, my heart hammering, frozen with panic.
It's coming from the master bedroom,
shouts one of Eric's staff, who has been consulting a panel by the fireplace. Someone set off the panic alarm! The police are on their way! I've ruined the party. Eric will kill me. He'll kill me! And then, with no warning, the noise stops. The sudden quiet is like the sun coming out.
Ladies and gentlemen.
A voice comes from the stairs, and my head whips round. It's John. He's holding a remote control and glances briefly up at me before addressing the crowd.
We hope you enjoyed our security demonstration. Rest assured, we are not under attack from robbers.
He pauses, and a few people laugh nervously. Around the room, the grills have already started retracting.
However,
John continues,
as all of you know, in London today, security is of prime consideration. Many developments talk about security. We wanted you to see it firsthand. This system is MI5 quality, and it's here for your protection.
My legs are so weak with relief, they're barely holding me up. He saved my life. As he continues talking, I totter back into the bedroom suite and find the blue fish still floating in the loo. I count to three, then plunge my hand in, grab the fish and, with a shudder, stuff it in my bag. I wash my hands, then head out to see that Eric has taken over from John.
From this adventure, you'll see even more clearly that we at Blue Developments understand you and your concerns better even than you yourselves do.
He's saying,
you're not our customers. You're our partners in a perfect lifestyle.
He lifts up his glass.
Enjoy your tours.
As he steps aside, a relieved babble of chatter and laughter breaks out. I can see the woman in her white trouser suit grabbing three massive diamond rings back from her husband and pushing them back onto her fingers. I wait a few minutes, then unobtrusively slip down the stairs. I grab a glass of champagne from a passing waiter and take a deep swig. I am never touching any panels again, ever. Or fish. Or lose.
This ends Disc 8.